sharing. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And we're very pleased and also very honored to have you today, Managing Director of Vice, to talk to us about your career journey and also a little bit about what you do and also your, of course, your current exploits. So without further ado, maybe tell us your name.
Yeah.
And tell us what you do on a daily basis in your company.
Yeah, so my name's Aaron Pierce, and I am, I live in Singapore, originally from Australia. And I'm the managing director of kind of Virtue by Vice here in APAC. So we have kind of offices across the region, stretching from Australia or Sydney, Melbourne, all the way up to kind of Shanghai in China. So I kind of are based in Singapore, but I spend a lot of time around Asia. Yeah,
that's really awesome. Many people say that your brand Vice is their favorite. How did it happen, and what lessons for other brands or companies which are penetrating new markets in APAC?
Yeah, but I mean, look, I was a fanboy of Vice before I started, and you quite regularly have people that you have that same conversation with. And look, Australia was the third market that Vice originally came to, kind of around the world. It started as a magazine in Canada, and then went to the US, and then there was a guy, Mikey, a Jewish guy from Australia, that went to New York and then kind of came back with Vice and started it there about 15 years ago. So when I was in the kind of reeling back the years here a little bit, so when I just kind of finished school, I remember kind of seeing Vice at a retail store that I used to work at called General Pants, that a lot of my friends still tease me about now. But I recognized it from then, and I was kind of related to the content, kind of growing up and getting older kind of with it, and what it was all about, the provocativeness and the boldness and the stories that it told. And then kind of come full circle, and I was based in Singapore, and there were offices for Vice that had kind of then rippled across, I guess, North America and LATAM and EMEA, and Vice came to Asia in about 2010, into China, and then Japan in 2012, and Indonesia in 2014, and then we opened offices in India and Singapore, and we had the original Australia one as well. And I came on board about just under a couple of years ago, and that was when we were also launching our agency business. So we've now got kind of multiple lines of business that have grown from what was the original magazine. We've got our Vice Digital business, which is like your .com and your social extensions, experiential, everything we do there. We've got Vice Studios, which is a production house, which a lot of people may have known of it for the Fyre Festival documentary that came out on Netflix recently, or a little while ago now, high performing on Netflix. We have our full service creative agency, which is Virtue, which has about 29 offices around the world. And then we've got our like production services like Vice Plus and Pulse, which is a production house as well. So evolution kind of going from like print media through to digital media through to studio and agency business. So really kind of diversified there, and now kind of spread out across the world, in kind of different levels of maturity, if you can call it that. But the DNA is still that kind of Vice DNA.
That's really awesome. Let's backtrack further and chat about your origins and your interesting career journey. Where did you grow up?
So I originally was born in Australia, but my whole family was from New Zealand, right? So my sister and I were born in Australia. When I was 5, I moved back to New Zealand, lived there until I was about kind of 12, 13. Came back to Australia as a, what is only going to be said as a very pale Kiwi with a very thick New Zealand accent. I went to the most traditional, oldest school in Australia. So I went from like a public school in New Zealand to the oldest, most traditional private school in Australia in year 8, second year of high school. Was bullied very hard. It's a very kind of rugby orientated high school, and I was a soccer football playing Kiwi.
Wow.
And I was bullied really hard, and I've talked about this a lot with kind of friends and that kind of thing, and I lasted there for about a year, and then my parents moved me to another high school where I was enjoyed it much more. I have a great group of mates, about 15 of us, that were still kind of friends to this day, and it was just being in the kind of right surroundings, and yeah, kids can just be quite mean as well, right? But it kind of makes you the person that you are. I left school and I actually went into hospitality, studied in hospitality for a couple of years, worked in it, and then left there and did a tourism degree up in Byron Bay, which is like the kind of beachy Amsterdam, if you want to call it that, which was fantastic. Went overseas for a couple of years and did the Australian abroad type of thing, and worked in London and the Greek islands, this type of thing. And then when I came back, I kind of fell into music and music marketing. And so worked at a couple of companies that heavily revolved around that, where the first one would take a lot of artists from record labels like Universal Music and Sony. We kind of had like Justin Bieber and Katy Perry and Lady Gaga before they were massive. Would do events with them and then distribute that content out across kind of TV, on digital, and through different kind of forms of print marketing. Then went across and kind of worked in kind of strategy, music strategy for Foxtel, the subscription service in Australia, as well as Telstra, one of the big telcos there, for a company called Multichannel Network. And then had a kind of come to Jesus moment where I decided that I wanted to full circle it back to hospitality, and started my own bar and restaurant, which was scary, but like once I kind of took the jump, it was the best decision I've ever made. Not financially, but from a kind of following your passion thing, it was fantastic. So did that for a number of years under a holding company called The Bearded Man, which we kind of laughed about earlier.
Yeah.
Had a couple of venues and did a number of pop-ups and did that for about 3 years. And then decided I kind of just wanted bigger and better, and went into business with a friend around kind of a gaming and esports business. But got to the point where my wife and I had had our first child, and I really wanted to work overseas again. Looked at the US, looked at Asia, ended up deciding on Asia. And came and worked at IPG for a sports marketing agency called Octagon. We did kind of music and sports. It was more kind of Southeast Asian role. And then just the holding company thing just wasn't really for me. I think I felt I was a bit more entrepreneurial based upon what I'd done. And so just it felt like more of a maintenance job than a build job. And so the incentive or the opportunity came along to kind of go to Vice, and so revert back to kind of early 20s fanboy Aaron and be like, oh my god, this is amazing, and it was a build job, like it was to kind of grow around the region. So came on board there as the managing director for the Virtue Agency, and then we've wrapped things together for the region. So we drive forward as this kind of business that when you kind of take it in its kind of sum of its greater parts, it's phenomenal altogether. And I think it's a transition time for digital media businesses, but the exciting thing for Vice is you have this lifestyle brand that's been built up over 25 years that people kind of that are in their 40s, 50s, or people in their kind of early 20s have this like connection to it because of the realness and what kind of Vice speaks to, the DNA, right?
Yeah.
And that's rippled through the other kind of lines of business that we have. And I think that's why people are really passionate around working for Vice, because it kind of speaks to who they are. And I think that's why clients and CMOs can get drawn to it as well, because they can relate to that. And proof is in the pudding. We've built a lifestyle brand up over 25 years. We can do it for other brands as well.
That's fantastic. What inspired you to help brands with digital media and also getting into this agency business? Why did you become managing director?
Why did I become managing director? I mean, look, I guess I have a goal to make sure I'm enjoying what I'm doing and who I'm doing it for. I guess the brand kind of ticked the second point of that, of who you're doing it for. And I guess what I'm doing, like, a lot of it, it's to do with kind of making a difference. So I guess when you look at Virtue, for example, like, we are not the company or the business that you come to just make a TVC which says, like, this toothpaste makes your teeth 3 shades whiter, right? That's not us. And, like, we're open about that when we're in meetings and when we're talking to people. Like, we're the kind of agency you come to if you want to have purpose for your brand, have like, linked to passion with your brand, like, build a lifestyle brand. And I guess as someone that's previously kind of had my own business and tried very endlessly to kind of build that brand up, like, you can do this here for big global brands, especially ones that are maybe going through hard times and this type of thing, or maybe don't have an identity they want to change. So I guess the challenge that comes with that is what kind of really excites me. And I guess the reality of trying to drive purpose or passion is the thing that I'm really connected to as well. Yeah. And the becoming the managing director, I don't know, it just kind of happened through kind of my career kind of jumps and then kind of coming through and doing this here. I mean, I really enjoy the leadership side of the business, both kind of leading kind of the build of a business, but also kind of working with our teams to kind of grow. I love that, and I think that's a big part of kind of being a managing director as well, right?
That's excellent. You dabbled in hospitality business through your vehicle, The Bearded Man. So regarding this career journey, did it prepare you to become a managing director?
Oh, 100%. I mean, look, if you go through, there's a small percent of people that probably come out of running a hospitality business unscathed, right? Both probably emotionally and financially. And I'd say that percent is like almost 0.1 kind of thing, right? Maybe if you're going in with a big pot of money, it makes it easier. But like, it's amazing experience for that. Because I think, like, I mean, it's at the, firstly, when you've got your own money on the line, that's a huge driving factor to make sure you succeed, right? And it's then you want to be so careful around, like, finding the right people, following the right process, like, doing the right things for maximum success. And so I don't think that ever, once you've experienced that, I don't think that ever leaves you, even if you're working for someone else, right? And so you have an empathy of what it's like to kind of have your own business, but you also have an understanding of, like, what's the priorities and what you should be going after for success. And I think you also understand the difference between, like, what it means to kind of own a company and what it means to work in a company. And I think sometimes empathy needs to come through with that, where it's like there is an effort, or there is a way of working that people can have up to a certain extent if they don't have kind of skin in the game. And then there's people that have skin in the game and where that kind of goes up to. And I think the whole thing with the hospitality experience was it just added just a whole new level of experience and a whole new level of kind of diversity of thinking and perspective. And so even though different kind of industry per se, the running of a business, learnings that came off that were just money couldn't have bought those. Yeah.
That's really insightful. What can our community listeners learn from your run of decades of experience in this business, and what insights did you learn from this remarkable journey?
From the hospitality one, or just in general, like from where I've kind of got to now?
Yeah, that's right.
The latter?
Yeah.
Look, I think there's probably a few things. Like, I mean, the main one is just kind of actually enjoy what you're doing. Like, do it for the right reasons. I've always tried to, I don't know, like, stay true for that. My dad is a banker, and I definitely know I could have never gone and worked in a bank. Like, I mean, I'm sitting here in shorts and a t-shirt, and it's not like purely kind of what you wear is what it's all about, but it's the culture, the place, the people. The whole thing with marketing and advertising is, like, the diversity of people that come into the industry is, like, such an exciting thing. And you compared to, like, people that maybe go and become a lawyer or go and become a doctor, or, like, it can really kind of hone in the type of people or that the diversity of people that might be in an industry like that, right? But like when you're looking at marketing and advertising, you have people coming in that have done arts degrees or business degrees, or they haven't gone to university, or they've done a career switch where, I mean, I'd hired people when I was at Octagon that had been like architects and like very like non-marketing people that had gone through quite traditional, like, oh, my parents would like me to do this, and then have turned to the parents going, oh, I don't want to be an actuary anymore, I want to go into marketing or sports marketing, and they're like, what are you thinking, kind of thing, right? So I like that part of the industry. But yeah, I think the career so far, I mean, I'm only kind of 36 now, like I still consider myself quite young, even though the 22-year-old Aaron would be like, shit, how old's the 36-year-old Aaron? But like the career so far, it's like, follow your passion, follow your purpose, like money's not everything. Think about the people you're around, the culture that you're around, the environment that you're around, like enjoy your day to day. Like it's, maybe some people will say, oh, that can be a bit of a dream, but like you can do it. And I think the other thing is like, if you want to change something for the better, like do it. Like there's only so far you can fall. Like if you have the ability to say I want change and make it happen, and you do it and it doesn't work out how you think it will, you'll figure out a way to kind of pivot and move. Like you don't, any entrepreneur will kind of say that. Like whether you listen to like a Gary Vee or a Tim Ferriss or a Richard Branson, like they'll say the same thing. And so I think like there's so many people that have walked that path. Like don't be afraid to kind of do it. And whether that's doing your own business or whether that's working for someone else, or it's kind of internally kind of moving within the business you're in, like push for change. Like it's good for you.
That's fantastic advice. And for every listener who knows and follow digital media business or agency business, what is a good 4-minute rant on the current state of the industry?
A 4-minute rant?
Yeah.
On the industry, jeez. Oh, on digital media? Look, I think it probably links to my point before around like being comfortable with change. Like, I think there's a couple of things. Like, look, there's no doubt that digital media businesses have been affected in a massive way by kind of your Googles and your Facebooks coming along. And they've had to disrupt themselves. And the ones that haven't kind of disrupted themselves, they're the ones that won't exist for much longer if you kind of are thinking kind of 5 years into the future. And like, but that's just the world that we live in now, with kind of tech where it's at and kind of change happening at the speed that it's happening. Businesses kind of need to be shaken up. And I mean, that's something that's happened to Vice as well. Like it's kind of had to change as times have changed, and it will continue to do that, but it will kind of continue to have the DNA that it has around kind of being provocative, being bold, and kind of speaking to that generation, right? So I think the rant on digital media is like, look, it's changing in a massive way. And I'd probably say the younger people that are kind of coming out of school and even like within their careers, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, like, kind of, you need to change with that, right? And so I think people really need to kind of think and kind of do their research on where they think the world is going, and hedge their bets on maybe what they think they should be doing. Because I think there's a lot of people that are in digital media roles that are going to be null and void in even the next year, right? And so, like, don't put your head in the sand as an individual. Think about kind of where the world's going. Think about kind of what you enjoy doing, and kind of make sure you're navigating down that path. And I think, look, I think there was a number of years where I just kind of sat there just kind of rolling with the punches, or kind of the motion of the ocean kind of thing. And like, control your destiny. And like, you don't have to have your own business to control your destiny. You can do it working for other people. And I think that's just, you have to live in a cave to not see that things are changing in a big way for digital media businesses, agency businesses, like outside of marketing and advertising, like other industries, right? So just make sure that you're feeling that you're heading in the right direction, so you don't just turn around in 2 years and be like, oh, what? Like, why is there no programmatic buying jobs anymore, right?
Yeah. Really great advice again. And what's been the most interesting thing in the last year or two for you? It can be completely anything, like an AI-driven campaign or experiment that you did on social media. what is your hot take on the intersection of social media, targeted marketing, and other marketing tools and platforms?
This is probably like a sideways step to kind of answer that question, but like, I'm not just saying this because it was a Vice project, but the Fyre Festival documentary on Netflix, like, not even just the documentary, but the whole kind of situation, like, there's so many amazing learnings that can come off this, right? Separate to the guy that kind of did the festival and the naivety or the stupidity or whatever you want to kind of call it that went with that, with him and Jerrell, but like, the start of it, like with the social media campaign that went with kind of the ticket sales and what they did there around influencers, that is like proof in the pudding that like social influencing works, right? So like, make like social influencer strategies, like think around that. The Vice has a great black book from the last 25 years around kind of influences within markets and different kind of realms of music and art and fashion, everything like that. Like, people need to be using those type of people, right? Like, you're going to listen to a friend, like a social friend, more than you might just kind of just look at a big billboard and be like, hey, I want to drink a beer kind of thing, right? Like, they can work in tandem, but like, there needs to be something there. But the Netflix, like, I guess the Fyre Festival utilization of that is an amazing example of how it works well. Even though it was fake as F, like, it shows that it worked because all these people went and sold out this festival that they ended up going to, and it was horrible, right? So that was amazing. I think the other thing with this is like, it's just watching kind of good content work. And I think that's just, it's such an important thing. I just caught up with a friend from another agency before this, and I guess just like, thoroughly thought out kind of content planning is so important, right? And whether that's kind of short form and going on to kind of Instagram stories or being played on TikTok or whatever it is, all the way through to kind of longer form, going on to kind of OTT platforms, whether it's kind of Netflix or Amazon or Hulu, whatever. Thoroughly think that out and be interesting. Like, that's how brands become lifestyle brands, right? And how kind of people connect with them, rather than maybe just being like, well, we're just going to do an outdoor campaign and hopefully that's going to tick enough boxes to sell X amount of kind of vehicles, right? Like, have some fun with it, but kind of realize that's kind of how you build a lifestyle brand. That's how you develop that connection, especially with kind of younger generations coming through, that like they'll lack a bit more loyalty. They'll need to be kind of spoken to in a better way. So I guess my thing with that kind of rant, if you want to call it, was like, look, social influencing works when done the right way with the right people, and make sure these people kind of resonate your brand. And then second to that, like, yeah, content planning, thinking about kind of what you're doing, just create cool stuff, and like, I guess just roll it out the right way. So like, as you're building a brand, whether it's like a person, an individual's brand, or like a brand, like a company brand, they all kind of come together. And that's, I think, some of it happened organically and some of it was like kind of planned, but that's what happened with Vice and how it kind of built into what it becomes and how it's so relevant these days, because it's got all the social kind of extensions. It's got the .com, it's got the studio, it's got like the kind of the longer form content, everything like that. Like, it's winning advertising awards. It's potentially winning like Oscars and Grammys and this type of thing. Like, brands should think like that, and how they are a distribution platform for their content and like that.
That's really excellent. What were the challenges you faced in the 2000s? What were they? And what are the current challenges you're facing today?
Like, just in general, as like me kind of thing? Well, I'll tell you what, in the early 2000s, I didn't have two kids, and now I have two kids. So that's definitely a kind of a challenge. I guess it's just like, I mean, that's kind of 19 years now, like 20 years, right? Like, I've been out of school more years than I was in school, kind of thing now. So like, your life just changes through the decades, right? Like, I mean, look, in the 2000s, I think I was it was I listened to this thing with Gary Vee the other day where he's like, with your 20s, treat it as a time where it's just experimentation. Like, you don't have to go into something and find exactly what you want to do right there. Like, try different things. Like, scratch itches, travel, like, experiment. Like, your 20s is amazing for that. And, like, I feel like I did that. Like, I feel like I achieved that, whether it was kind of meant to be or not. Like, my mum's a school teacher. My dad's a actuary, like, an accountant. Like, they're literally the last people that would suggest doing that. They come from a generation where it's like, get a job, stay in the job, have a family, like, be safe, right? So, like, when I said I was going to go and do the bar, like, my dad was like, you're an idiot. Like, what are you doing this for? And my mum was more supportive because she's kind of growing with the tattoos that I've got and kind of mellowed out a bit. But I think that was experiment in your 20s, and so that's the 2000s. And, like, learn, experiment, like, think non-traditional about it as well. Like, you don't have to go to uni. Like, listen to podcasts, like, read, like, be diverse with what you're learning about. Like, do that. And then kind of when you come into kind of the 2010s and beyonds, like the next kind of decade afterwards, like, it was you kind of sharpen that a bit. Like, you take that diversity of learning and you apply it in different ways to kind of what you're doing. But I guess the challenge now is kind of helping to kind of run a business at the same time as being married and having two kids and living in a different city to my parents and my wife's parents and the kind of realities that come with that. And I think that's it's all part of kind of putting yourself outside your comfort zone. So I think that's probably the thing. Like, the thing in your 20s is kind of is juggling just like what is the world all about and kind of finding who you really are. And I think when you kind of then going through the next decade, being the last one was my 20s, this one's my 30s, like, you start to really figure out who you are and what you want to kind of go after, your comfortability with kind of risk and change and everything like that. But yeah, the biggest challenge in over this 10 years was kind of, I guess, just really defining who you are and what was important to you at the same time as kind of having a career and having a family. And I think it's really important to kind of juggle those things. Like, I mean, when I was growing up, my dad wasn't really around. He built an amazing life for our family, but he wasn't really around. There was a real concentration on kind of work. And I think that can slightly change now because of technology and the ability to kind of travel quicker and connect more and this type of thing. But it's, I think it's still a really important thing for people as you go through your career. Like, remember to exercise, remember to eat healthy, like, remember to spend time with your family and friends, and remember to kind of work on your career. Like, if any of those things individually fall down, it's going to affect the others negatively. So just be really disciplined with yourself around kind of juggling those things.
Fantastic advice from you again. So, can you tell us the best day of your career so far? What are your achievements and milestones of your tenure? And what do you think are the things that you haven't done yet?
Okay, so there's probably a few things to this. I mean, one of the happiest moments of my career was, I guess, when we first opened one of our restaurants, Fat Rupert's, named after my dog Rupert, in Sydney. And that was just a moment where I'd kind of made a big career change, or perceived big change, but I mean, you're just trying something different. Open that, and so kind of opening up and your friends and your family coming through and just like this kind of physical manifestation of a creation being kind of this bar and restaurant and all your friends and family being there, and you're like, oh my god, this is amazing. So that was definitely one. I think another one was kind of when I started with kind of Octagon IPG in Singapore, because that was another kind of moment of, wow, I've moved to Asia, like, with my family, my one-year-old son at the time, and my wife. And then, like, there's other ones along the way when you can kind of say, oh, this was a great campaign that we did. Like, we did a two-day festival in Mumbai with Budweiser, for example, and you've got, like, some of the biggest rappers from kind of Gully Rap and Divine from India kind of performing there, and artists coming from the UK, and, like, it's like, it's so emotional because, like, you put so much time and effort, and the team has put so much time and effort into this, and then suddenly for 2 days that something happens, like, those moments kind of make you so happy because, like, you know the effort that people have put into it. We did one with the Chainsmokers, these DJs back in Octagon times, and we did it at Marina Bay Sands with Octagon, and it was another moment where it's just like, I think the music, like, also kind of brings that emotion out, and you're like, oh, this is amazing, and there's like music going with it. So, but yeah, I think three moments would be one, Fab Rupert's and opening the bar, and the day that that kind of happened. The second would be kind of, I guess, arriving in Singapore for the first time after never having worked in Asia before, and kind of walking in the front of Octagon being like, oh my God, this is happening. And then the third one would be kind of Vice, and like walking into there on the first day, or I probably flew across to, I think it was the first week, flew to Williamsburg and like went into the Vice office, and I was like, oh my God, like, I can't believe I'm here, kind of thing. And those would be your kind of tier one moments, and then a lot of tier two moments kind of more around like work that's been done, and just moments that are kind of like a kind of just, it's all kind of come to this and it happens, and it's just like boom kind of thing, whether it's a campaign going live or an event or something like that.
Those are really equally important moments. I could feel goosebumps when you were describing it.
Yeah.
So how did
And also you, within my career, I'd have to say that the birth of my two sons as well was probably up there, along as my wedding. I'd say if I'm saying tier one, tier two, it's probably that's top tier. And then obviously a lot of the work stuff as well, yeah.
Got it. How did you stay fresh, sharp and creative and on top of your game? Do you have any athletic pursuits, or do you indulge in music, media, shows or books?
Yeah, for sure. Like, there's a range there. So I exercise a lot. Like, I run heaps. I used to play football. I go to the gym a fair bit. I try to exercise about 5 times a week, and I think that's really important. I find if I don't exercise, I feel it mentally. Like, I feel sluggish, not just in my body, but in my mind. So that's really important. More recently, over kind of the period of having my kids as well, I've decreased in a huge way the amount of drinking that I've done, or I do. So I don't really drink too much now either, probably more for moments of celebration, like a wedding or different things like that. And at times, if I just need to de-stress, I might just do it, kind of thing. But especially kind of 20s to 30s, the decrease in alcohol, like, definitely helped out. I don't think I could juggle everything I'm doing if I'm consistently having hangovers, right? So the exercise, eating pretty healthy as well is a massive one. Just that general kind of lifestyle thing of trying to be fit and healthy, like, it just, for me, it just really helps my body and body, soul, mind, all that kind of stuff, right? And in regards to sport, I kind of touched on that. I've completely forgotten the question. Was there anything else that I've missed there?
Are there any things that you indulge in? Books, shows?
Oh yeah, sorry. So yeah. My wife loves reality TV as well. And I read this thing 2 days ago that apparently that is the best type of TV to bond as a couple. I don't ask me kind of why, but I think it's just the trashiness of the TV and what it is. Like,
can you name me some shows that you watch together with your wife?
Yeah, so it pains me to say this because, like, I don't feel I learn anything from them, but it is great bonding time with my wife. But, like, there is one called Love Island.
There is
The Hills, which was a show that was around like 10 years ago. Now it's around now. There is one that she watches called The Real Housewives of Somewhere, and then another one called Vanderpump Rules, which is actually around a restaurant in LA that runs. And then there's one she's watching now called The Bachelor. Well, I say she, but we watch it, whatever. Some of those kind of, I kind of jump in and out. She watches them more than me, but I kind of jump in and out at times. Love Game of Thrones, love a lot of the kind of... I love watching kind of documentaries as well, whether it's kind of sport or music. I do really love music, and I get that's one of the cool things with Vice as well, like just the kind of the access into kind of emerging music, especially out of Asia as well. Like, you look at rap in China, India, amazing, like, kind of coming out, but not like Western kind of English rap, like China, like Mandarin rap or rap out of India, right? And so that's amazing to kind of not just find out about, but to kind of see in person as well. and I've worked around music a fair bit. So I really do like that. We would regularly have music on in our house, whether it's kind of Michael Jackson, Rod Stewart, Earth, Wind, Fire, like love diversity, love kind of jazz, funk, like this type of thing. And really into, I read a fair bit, not as much as what I did pre-kids, but love a good kind of autobiography, whether it's Richard Branson, Richard McCaw, this type of thing as well.
Since we're in the topic about music, do you think nobody does marketing better than Kanye West or Kim Kardashian?
Look, I think they do, they're very smart with what they do, right? At times, it maybe bridges into like being too public, because I think the challenge is like at times when people say, "Oh, why is the media so probing? Like, why are they always trying to look at us?" Right? But they've literally opened themselves up to the world as well. Like, I'm surprised Kanye went, "Oh, that Keeping Up with the Kardashians is another one of the shows."
That's
actually,
show, yeah.
But like, I'm amazed that he kind of said, "Yeah, cool. Like, I'll go on to that show." Because he's traditionally been kind of private, yet public with his kind of Twitter and everything like that, right? But like, I think the amazing examples of brands, like I think Kris Jenner has done a phenomenal job with kind of Kardashians getting to the point that they have, especially, I mean, it was started as a kind of essentially kind of amateur porn star, kind of then became like one of the world's biggest kind of reality stars / kind of brands. So to think about what they've done there, even like you use kind of Kim and Kanye as an example, yes, amazingly smart in how they've kind of pushed their brands out, even when they've been provocative to the point of being kind of like, is that right or wrong, right? Like Kanye, when he took the award off Taylor Swift kind of thing, like, should have he done that? I mean, all publicity is good publicity, but I mean, sometimes that can be thrown back in your face, but I mean, it's done nothing to dent their bank accounts, has it? But then you kind of look at the Kardashians and kind of what they've done now, and how one of the other younger sisters, I think it's Kylie, then started her own makeup brand, which is a phenomenal case study of now how kind of influencers as a brand are launching kind of products off their profile, right? So now you're seeing DJs, there is this wicked DJ called Paul Fisher that we look at a fair bit on kind of Instagram. Hilarious Ocker Australian guy, but now he kind of wears these kind of sells these party shirts, like kind of like your shirt, but like
this
kind
one.
Of button up shirts.
Okay.
And it's kind of like it's an extension of him, like, right? And I think the Kylie Cosmetics piece, it's amazing. Like she essentially kind of got valued at being a billionaire. And the setup of it is like she sells her stuff through Instagram, linked to a Shopify account. And when things are bought, they literally just go to a warehouse in China with 500 employees there, externally owned company, right? And she, as like Kylie Cosmetics, only had 7 employees. So she's about $1 billion company with
wow.
7 employees. And that path to purchase. And so like, things like that, like, excites me to kind of see it, because I mean that disrupts the makeup industry, right? So you're like looking at that as L'Oreal, like they can't buy that, because like it's so linked to her IP, right? But it's going to disrupt them in a massive way. So it's not like Dollar Shave Club where P&G or whoever it was comes along and kind of buys them. Like it's going to be really interesting to see the brands that kind of, or products that come off personal brands, and how that kind of disrupts different kind of industries as well. But I think to go back to your question, I think they're amazing at kind of PRing themselves through different forms, whether it's kind of organic or they mean to do it type of thing. But when you actually kind of dig a bit deeper into that Kardashian clan, like what they've done is just quite phenomenal, and really, really quite smart.
Last career question. What would you like to be remembered in your job or your career legacy?
I mean, there's a few kind of, whether you say they're nonchalant or whether you say they're a bit kind of fluffy, like I'd like to just be known for someone that generally kind of just followed passion, followed purpose, and and was able to kind of manage that both as a career and with a family. Wasn't kind of afraid to change. Like, who knows? Like, in 5 years' time, I might be not working in advertising. I mean, how many 40-plus-year-olds are there in advertising anyway? Like, where does your kind of path take you? Like, I mean, my thing would be, like, you kind of want your parents to be proud of you, but you also want to set a good example for your kids. And I think that's through kind of probably diversity of what I've done, and whether that ends up me kind of having my own business or continuing to work for others. Like, I guess it's just all about kind of leading by example. And I guess you want to kind of be the person that people say, like, you set a good example. And I guess that's what I'd like to be.
That's really, really inspirational. We're going to end this podcast with our last segment, speed round. So remember, don't overthink your answers.
Yeah.
All right? So let's start. Your most admired CMO ever?
The Fernando, whatever his name is, from Burger King.
Best agency you ever worked with?
Best agency I ever worked with? Let me just say Virtue, because it's top of mind.
Can you remember the first brand or campaign that had an impact on you when you were a kid?
I cannot. That was a very long time ago. I am trying to... I'd probably have to say McDonald's, because I'm a big fan of McDonald's right now. Still.
Singapore, Hong Kong, or Sydney?
Oh, I can't go past Sydney, to be honest. Like, home is where the heart is at, right? Like, used to live in Bondi, surf, that type of thing. I do love Singapore and Hong Kong, but Sydney is amazing.
Cardio or weights?
Cardio or weight? I'd have to go with cardio, to be honest. I do enjoy running and listening to music.
Vegetarian or meatitarian?
That's a tough one. We try to eat vegetarian, but like I'm a big fan of kind of like red meat, white meat, like love kind of fish, this type of thing. So I'll go to that. I'll go vegetarian.
Podcasts or vlogs?
I like podcasts. I like podcasts because I can run and listen to them. I can listen to them when I'm walking to and from work. I just get really irritated when you're walking places and people are on their phones kind of walking, like this type of thing. So I'll say podcast based upon functionality.
Cola or lemonade?
Oh, I don't really drink soft drinks, so I'd probably say lemonade, because I don't really like Coca-Cola.
What is your biggest passion?
My biggest passion, if I'm just picking one, I'd say my family.
Awesome. Thank you so much for spending over 40 minutes with us. It's a pleasure, it's an honor to have you on our podcast. So you have a great weekend.
Thanks, mate. Thank you
so much.
Yeah.
Cheers.